Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm here with Michael Hudson, who is the chairman and CEO of Hannon Metals. This is the first time we've spoken to Michael, so I'm going to just give you a little bit of his background. For the past 28 years, Michael has developed mineral exploration properties. He's worked on those over the last 28 years worldwide. He has an impressive academic background in his geological studies from the University of Melbourne, and he received the Tolhurst Nobel Prize for Mining Investment Analysis in Victoria, Australia. And he started his career in 1990 with Pasminco. That's the largest global integrated zinc producer during the 1990s, and spent 10 years working with zinc lead projects worldwide, from exploration to pre-feasibility projects in Pakistan, Australia, and Peru. Michael has raised over $100 million in primarily European-focused exploration projects in Finland, Spain, Portugal, Sweden, and Ireland. Since 2004, he has headed Mawson Resources as founding chairman, CEO, and director. He is also a founder and chairman of Leading Edge Materials. It's a critical metals company in Sweden and a director of Hydro 66 Holdings Corp. But today we want to talk to Michael about Hannon Metals, which has an exciting new discovery in Peru. I first heard about Hannon when interviewing Bob Moriarty on this show towards the end of 2019. Bob picked Hannon as one of his top two picks for 2020. On the basis of Bob's recommendation, I checked out his story as the story of Hannon, and liked it very much, and agreed that it is a compelling story, putting it into my as coverage for my newsletter, J. Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stock. So I'm really delighted to have Michael with me today. But before I say hello to Michael, I should note that this interview was pre-recorded on Monday afternoon, March 16th in New York, or Tuesday morning in Melbourne, Australia, where Michael is. At this time, the shares of Hannon were trading at around Canadian 15 cents or around 12 cents in U.S. money. And so with 178 million shares outstanding, it gives the company a minuscule market cap of maybe around $20 million in U.S. money or something like that. So, of course, that's a minuscule market cap only if the company has something of value much more than its market cap. And I believe that is the case, which is why I'm really pleased to have Michael with me today. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
It's a pleasure, Jay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and thanks for traveling safely, and I guess you're self-quarantining yourself quarantined down in Melbourne. Now you just went on a whirlwind trip. My goodness, how many continents, and just incredible. You were in South America, you were in Canada, where all were you in the last couple weeks?
It was the Amazon to Arctic field trip, punctuated by PDAC and a U.S. marketing tour through five or six of your major cities there last week. So I've been around the world, man.
Boy, you sure have, literally. And I hope that you're well and keep safe down there in these very dangerous times. Well, notwithstanding current market conditions, I know you are excited about your sediment-hosted copper-silver project down in Peru, known as the San Martin Project. Can you help our listeners understand why the excitement from your perspective as a geologist, even if the markets could care less right now?
Well, exploration is the engine room for the mining business, Jay, and the truth is that we work on big time frames. We're going to mine more than copper in the next 20 years than we have on the history of the earth. So the world is desperately looking for new metals, and copper specifically because of the electrification of the world. So what we've come across in Peru is basically a new basin, a new sediment hosted copper silver basin, which is pretty rare. You know, we've searched the world pretty thoroughly over the last 100 years, and new deposits are hard to find, let alone new basin scale areas, which, you know, we've got an area staked over 120 kilometers, excuse my metric, but it's a huge area, new discovery.
Oh, it's huge, absolutely huge. Can you give us a sense then of the grades that you found? And I believe you've had over several areas of this massive discovery, you've seen outcroppings, and you've gotten some pretty high grades. Could you share those with our listeners?
Yeah, sure. The context of the mineralization is pretty well understood because we've got the data of the petroleum industry who've explored there for the last 20 or 30 years. So it's really important that these grades have great context at the same or similar stratigraphic horizons over that, you know, 100 plus kilometers. So we've been getting areas of 3 to 5 meters thickness at sort of 3 to 5% copper. Wow. Plus an ounce or two of silver, really, in the few outcrops that we found. We found, you know, half a dozen or so outcrops and then hundreds of boulders in creeks, but the grades are exceedingly high and they need to be for these deposits to work. But yeah, very, very good start.
And I believe there's, you know, as I noticed on the map on your website, there are about 5 different targets, I believe, on this San Martin. How far apart are they located, and which ones might you be working on or focusing on first, and why?
Yeah, it's a really good question because we've got such a large area, and we want to make sure we're focusing in on the best areas as early as we can. So we've got a large stream sediment survey sampling program to try and nail down the better parts of the system over that 120-kilometer trend. We've walked a lot of these areas already. We did a little bit of work this year, and then we've been funded to put a much bigger team in this year, and up until a few days ago, they were working there very actively. We've also found areas where there's more outcrops. The very southern area, which we call Sakanche, is the area of interest at the moment. We've inferred this rich copper horizon over a couple of kilometres through the outcrops and the like. So that's where we're putting in the most effort at the moment, and that correlates to where we're gaining social license and accessing these areas with the approval of the local landholders. So it's hand in hand, but there's no shortage of target areas, and we've got sort of like a pyramid of work programs where we're covering large areas rapidly, and as we progress to the top of that pyramid, we're doing a lot more detailed work like soils and mapping and eventually drilling in those areas where we've got more information.
Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned up until a few days ago your people were on the site working away. Are you being held back a bit now by the coronavirus?
Yeah, this is going to affect the whole industry from supplies right down through to getting people on the ground. Peru only yesterday announced a state of emergency, and everyone in the country must self-isolate. They can only go out and buy food, medical supplies, or the banks are staying open. So that's, of course, going to affect us in the short to medium term, and no doubt we'll see how that progresses. But airports have shut down. The regional airport that has 10 or 11 flights from Lima daily over a 50-minute flight for us to get in. So it's a time for reflection and pulling together some data. But we've been working there for the last few months pretty actively. So there will be news flow and data coming through over the next month or so as all that work is compiled and assays are received.
Okay. I'm wondering, you have these outcrops. Is that true of all 5 of those targets that you have so far, that you've had outcrops on all 5 of them?
It depends on what scale we're talking about, the 5 areas, but really most of the outcrops have come on that southern 20 kilometres of the trend, Jay, where we put in much more work. So that's the Kanche area. Yeah. We're talking 20 kilometres, which is only 1/5 of our area. Up north, zipping 80 kilometres north, we found mainly just boulders and creeks. So we haven't had the time to basically walk up the hills to find those outcrops where those boulders are coming from. But we certainly know it's extensive. We know it's the same type of mineralization. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly in the south where we've done the work, where we've got those outcrops.
Okay, that's the Sakanche area, I think is what you said. And do you have a sense of, I mean, are these flat-lying beds, sedimentary beds? And if that's the case, are they, how deep do you think they might be where it doesn't outcrop? Do you have any sense of how deep these things might be under the surface?
Yeah, we have an idea because we've got this petroleum data that I just briefly mentioned. Uh-huh. We've got the seismic data. So we actually have torn this basin apart, or well, the petroleum industry did, in terms of torn it apart in terms of geological understanding. So these things are generally flat lying, which is important because it makes them more mineable. Now that's a big forward looking statement because sure. we haven't yet drilled this. This is a brand new discovery.
Sure.
But flat lying bodies give you the chance to on sort of skinnier bodies, the 2 to 5 meter thick horizons, if they're flat lying, are much more mineable than if they're vertical and costs go through the roof and it makes it harder. So that's a pleasing concept. And the other style of mineralization that we found, there's a couple of styles of mineralization, I suppose, in this basin. So I've been just talking about the thinner, higher grade copper. Mm-hmm. But we know there's gossans, lead zinc gossans, that are peripheral to copper bearing areas that are 50 to 80 meters thick. And we're finding those over tens of kilometers also. Wow. And all grades of lead zinc that form peripherally in the analogs. And we should have a talk about the analogs around the world too, what we've got. And we know that they're going to be mineralized, and we've got some evidence they're copper mineralized as well as we move along strike. So it's just not the thin high grade. We've got basically thin high grade over this 120 kilometers is more than analogous to some of the big, huge deposits in the world, but also these gossans that, you know, nobody's looked at this. This is frontier country in an area that's pretty accessible, and so that's the exciting thing. We're only limited to what we know at the moment, and we're going to find out a lot more as we progress this year and beyond.
Well, for sure. Okay, so let's talk about the analog. Can you compare what you're seeing here at this early stage with some of the great sedimentary hosted deposits around the world?
Yeah, that's the exciting thing, is that the geology is so analogous to the Kupferschiefer, which is in Poland and Germany, which has been mined literally for thousands of years. And that's one of the largest copper deposits on Earth, copper and silver deposits. And of course, the other analog is the African copper belt, where a huge amount of the world's copper and cobalt comes from. Now, we've got a little bit of cobalt, but it's mainly the silver-rich end member that we're looking at. These deposits are the second most prolific form of copper on Earth after porphyries. And porphyries have been the big game changer since the 70s in the copper business, but their grades are lowering, and the amount of rock that has to be taken out to get these porphyries out of the ground is becoming bigger and bigger. So the big prize really in the copper space are these sediment hosted copper deposits, and if you can find a new basin, you're really in the nirvana world of future copper exploration.
Right. Now you just have to go start to drill them and prove that that's what you really have, and of course that's going to take some time. But what can we look forward to then? I guess it's really hard to plan your drill program because of this coronavirus, but what do you think might be accomplished this year, assuming that this thing doesn't go on too many more months?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we can only work within the boundaries of how this plays out, but our plans still stay intact, and we'll enact them again as the situation allows. But basically, we've got half a dozen geologists on the ground, four to six geologists, and we're basically doing all that sampling, which is really quite cheap, but the most first principle thing to do in any new discovery is to understand the geology and go and sample what's at surface. Equally, as I touched on before, obtaining that social license from the people on the ground is critical. So we've got a social licensing team, and then employing people locally in each different provincial area, so we can message what we're doing, what we said we'd do, what we've done, and building up that credibility with the locals. And then we hope to be going towards drill permitting in some of these areas in the next 2 to 3 months, but we'll see where that goes. And that should have us drilling by the end of the year in specific areas. It's a sort of a 6-month process, we figure, but Peru's been very difficult. We know Peru well. You touched on some of my experience, and I've been there since the 90s, and I've been working with the team that's in place in Peru since those days. So we've got very experienced people and know how to operate in the country very well. But that's our best guess at the moment, Jay,
sure.
All else being
sure.
a bit uncertain.
Sure, absolutely. And there will be some more data coming through, though, before you're drilling, as you said. And so how well-funded are you, Michael? And that question, and just with another minute left, any metallurgical problems on the horizon?
That's a good question, too. So funding-wise, we put about 2.2 million Canadian in the bank only a month or two ago, which was extremely well-timed, no doubt, and that will allow us a $1.7 million program this year, which is, you know, relatively substantial, and we'll find out 10 times as much about this discovery over the next 6 months if we can get back on the ground. And we've been working there for the last few months, and we've been finding a hell of a lot. Metallurgically, copper is in the form of chalcocite, which is probably the best high-grade pure copper mineral that you'd want, and the concentrates that chalcocite can do form are in demand. So that there's no red flags at the moment without a hell of a lot of metallurgical work, of course, but chalcocite is what everybody wants.
Excellent. All right, well, we really wish you the best. It is an exciting story, no doubt, we'll be keeping in touch with you, Michael, to find out how things are going, both for my newsletter as well as for the listeners of this show. I want to thank you very much for being with us today, and we'll look to update this story as things unfold. Thank you so much for being with us.
Many thanks, Chad.